When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey yo, what's up everybody? Hello, Off The Record fans, it's Huey. I'm back. It's good to be back with you this week. Now, I spent a crazy weekend playing and hanging out at Glastonbury, and I have a couple pods coming up with some friends of mine I hung out with there. They're coming your way, so stay tuned for that. You'll have to subscribe and stay tuned, and we'll get it all on tape for you, don't worry. Now, a heads up on the merch giveaway. Winners have been announced and informed, so if you're one of them, you know. And if you don't know, now you know that it's not you. But keep your eyes on the website for merch that you can buy. I got some good stuff coming at you like Cleopatra. Let's get after it, friends. My guest this week is a legendary Bristol musician from the Jungle Drum and Bass School of Beats. He's one of the original members of Represent, the Mercury Prize Award winners back in 97 for the album New Forms, when the Mercury Prize meant something. It's just bullshit now. He's an internationally renowned DJ and producer in his own right and owner of Gutta Funk Records. It is the man, DJ Dye, my peoples. Now, on the pod this week, we're hanging out in Dye's garden in Bristol, and we talk about the similarities between New York and Bristol, both being port cities with their melting pot cultures, and how that affects you as a person and as a musician. And we drop names like crazy, like a Chinese phone book, man. It's going crazy. Talking about musical influences, heroes we meet on tour. We kind of hung back in the 90s a little bit. That's when we met. We got lots of people in common, and it's going down Real style. That's what I'm saying now. I've been over here listening to all these people talk about the soccer teams, like, yo, Real Madrid. So instead of saying Real Madrid, I'm saying it's Real. So that's what's going on here. It's Real. So my dudes, his cat busting halfway through. You can hear his washing machine going, sirens wailing. You've been badass drum and bass legends. Got to do laundry. I do my own laundry too, man. Almost most of it. People don't do my laundry right. Nah, I can't say that. Nah, you know what? I'm just going to leave it at that. So check out, man, his DJ Dye and me on Huey Off The Record. Peace.
Beautiful day, bro.
It's a beautiful day.
So just so people can kind of get a picture where we are, we're in Dee's backyard, chillaxing on a beautiful day.
It is a beautiful day.
Today's Bristol the 13th, City. Man. Yeah, in Bristol, man. And that's one of the things I did want to get from you at one point. I might as well do it now because I can actually I can record it for posterity. Is when I was in New York City growing up, yeah. I knew about three cities in London.
Right.
Three cities in the UK. Pardon me.
Yeah,
I knew
yeah.
about London.
Right.
Because of the Clash.
Yeah.
I knew about Liverpool because of the Beatles.
Okay.
And I knew about Bristol because of all these like kind of I guess we used to call it trip hop.
Yeah.
But that was
only because
it was like really heavily produced good hip hop. You know, because
yeah.
if you put more than a beat and a sample on it and a bass line, people think, "What are you doing? You're getting conscious."
Yeah. But it's so. I mean, that was a tag they gave it. You know, because mm-hmm. they want to always pigeonhole something. You know, which section of Walmart do we put this in?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, put it in the trip hop section.
Yeah. But the brand new trip hop section.
Yeah. But I mean, you could give it loads of names. It could be called the Bristol Sound.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But yeah, you know, people always think of Massive Attack, mm-hmm. Tricky, Porter's Head.
Mm-hmm.
They're the first three. Do you know what I mean? Everybody knows about those. They traveled the furthest.
Well, I'll tell you, when you traveled pretty damn far, because when I met you, well, I didn't meet, you know, it wasn't
you. Where
did
we meet? It was Australia.
Yeah, right? It was on the big day out. So you did actually travel quite far, man.
Yeah, we got around.
And that was 97? 98?
Really? Damn.
Dude, it was dope.
That was a good tour, man. Yeah.
It was amazing meeting you guys, because I remember,
I'm not saying that we were doing shit that hasn't been done before, but you were. And that's what I thought was super impressive about you guys, because I thought I had heard all types of music in my life, right? And but, you know, that stuff didn't get heavy, like, proliferated until you guys. I know that there was Goldie, and he's cool. I know G, and he's cool, but it came from Bristol, but you guys just started pop.
Yeah, I mean, I guess because, you know, the album won the Mercury Music Prize. Yeah. That suddenly pricked everyone's ears up, you know, and we had, like, you know, a label people in America. We toured America, we toured Australia, Japan, we went to every, you know, all the major continents, and, like, yeah, you know, we got to go out there and, you know, be pioneers, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, there was definitely people that went before us, you know, but we were kind of, you know, well known at that point. But I never forget when we met and went in the hotel lobby, and we seen you guys, and we just kind of, like, instantly clicked.
Mm.
And was your drummer at the time?
Was it, what year was it? Was it Mackie or Steve?
Mackie, man. It was Mackie.
Oh, yeah, it was Mackie.
And the Cro-Mags. Wallabies, man.
Yeah.
Yo, where are you going to get the Wallabies on, man?
Mackie's the styling brother, yeah. Man, yeah.
But yeah, we linked, man, and we were on tour, so big day out, isn't it? It's like, you know, you tour all over Australia, but you're like,
we were
crew.
In New Zealand, yeah. It's like, it's kind of, it was cool.
In New Zealand, right?
And we'd all fly together, I remember, because we were like not in the headline band, and we'd be in the airplane in the back, not in
front.
And then you'd go up front and it'd be like the people from Hole and Marilyn Manson,
right.
And they were giving each other this.
Marilyn Manson was there.
He was all right. I like that.
He was cool.
Yeah, I mean, his vibe was really cool. His band were crazy though, man. Those guys were loony. But I thought it was cool because you guys were like us in the respect that we knew we were doing what we were doing, like Fun Loving Criminal style music, right? Mm-hmm. And you guys knew what you were doing, you know, I guess you call it drum and bass music, right?
But it was becoming drum and bass. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, you know, I like to call it jungle.
Mm. All right,
because
cool.
That to me, that just started, it was jungle. And they give it a new name when it started getting a two-step beat and being... But, you know, jungle was always about the drums and the bass telling the story. Do you know what I mean? So it was the Amen breakbeat, the mm-hmm. Winston Brothers being chopped into a million pieces, rock with 808, you know, and that's jungle to me. But yeah, they started calling it drum and bass, and that's what maybe the most of the world knows it as, but I say jungle, drum and bass. Just another word.
Yeah, one of the things that I liked about how you guys did what you did was you could turn it off and be regular dudes. You know, you meet some musicians that just have to be fucking clever all the time. Like, they do a lot of tuning of their guitar in dressing rooms and shit. I don't see my guitars after sound check. I don't see them until I walk on stage. I don't go, can the guitar let me warm up? And then when people are trying to talk to me, like playing fucking Lola.
Guitar tech best have them tuned up.
Yeah, you better have them on stage, making sure no one steps on anything.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, you're from Bristol. One thing about being from Bristol, again, is like, it's a small city, you know, and it's full of, it's always been full of people who've been doing something. Know from way back when, so it's like you got to be a regular dude to get on down there.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, that's
like,
true. I mean, I didn't know that though. Yeah, right. I didn't know that. So for me, that was mad refreshing. I was like, I like these Bristol people.
Well, you guys were from New York, you know. New Yorkers were the coolest thing on earth.
But also keep in mind, port cities, man.
Right.
Our diversity is so much ingrained in the cities. Mm. Like, you see people trying to get diverse now. It's a little late in the game, right? Like, this is like,
it's too late for diversity.
I'm not saying that, but, you know,
but there's a lot of
people are just getting forced on each other and they're not ready for
it. We're gonna get down to that slew in the paradigm and things that are just like the normalities of this thing. But yeah, I mean, we had a lot of influence from Bristol from way back when, from, like, you know, from the when all the Jamaicans first came over on the boats, you know, and they moved to certain cities and made you know.
Well, I mean, there's some of the roads around here, like, I remember, because my wife I love Bristol so much, I married a girl from Bristol.
Yes, right.
But I remember, like, when I first came and drove around here, when I met her parents, it was like White Ladies Road and Black Boys Road. I'm like, wow, this is like...
It goes deep.
But you know what? I think something like that is good for a society, because you know that old saying, if you forget your past, you're doomed to repeat it?
Right.
I think in a lot of ways, though it be uncomfortable and though it be barbaric, it's good to have it there so people know, don't ever try this shit again. Because I think so much now with political correctness, they kind of gloss over all the bad shit.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of sort of, you know, untold stories from back in those days, that isn't like common knowledge. You don't get taught it in schools, the history of Bristol and how certain roads got named, you know, what they are now. But, you know, if you do look into it, and there are certain people around that, you know, you know, good friend of mine, Lawrence Hu.
I don't know Lawrence. Yeah, man,
of course. Lawrence has educated me a lot on, you know, on the city and, you know, things that have, you know, the guy Colston, who they're now trying to change the Colston Hall's name for, oh, you know, yeah, at the wow. moment, because, you know, he's...
He was a scumbag.
Had, yeah, he was a scumbag. He had his hand in fair trade, in a slave trade. Oh. But apparently he was like the middleman. He was just the guy that knew the people to sell it to.
Oh, so God,
the slaves would come off the boats and he would be like, yo, we need to get rid of these
worse
guys.
Than yeah. a slave trader on
but
the middleman.
But he was the middleman. He wasn't the man going on the boats and getting them. He was just like, yo, you know, we've got these slaves. Do you know where to get rid of them? And he's like, yeah, actually, I know some guys up there. You know, I'll do the middle work. So, but yeah, they named the Colston Hall after him. And now they're trying to change it.
See, the UK was far more enlightened than the colonies during the whole slavery thing, man. I mean, right. I mean, there was like a society was prevalently against it when it, you know, it suited them. But in America, all that kind of stuff is like, yo, it's just it's too deep, man. You know what
you
I'm saying?
Can't deal with it. People can't even address it, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like if you know there's that whole thing going on with this thing Black Lives Matter, right?
Yeah.
And I think it started as like, you know, Black Lives Matter too, dude. You know, like people, a lot of black people getting killed by police and things.
Yeah.
And that's totally cool, man. But then they turn it into like, I don't know what they turned it into, but it's not what I thought it was.
Someone got a hold of it, you know.
Yeah, I'm not too sure what's going on now.
It's just a word, you know. It's just like something that's probably been tweeted with a hashtag in front of it. It's a word, and someone's got hold of it, twisted it up. Of course, there's a massive meaning behind it, and a massive amount of, like, you know, seriousness that needs to be addressed.
And I appreciate it. And I think
you're going to get someone that, you know, doesn't understand it and complains about it.
But, like, for instance, that's why I was saying that, because in Bristol, you don't have that problem. It's you know, it's not like, and I think this is maybe something that port cities have, right?
Yeah.
All around the world has come and touched these shores.
The world has
touched Bristol.
Yeah.
You know, the world has touched New York City, and right. I think Bristol was a huge port city in the British Empire. You know, but it's still a huge port city, you know, for that respect.
Yeah.
I mean, you go to that Costco right around the block, man. That's just all coming from China, man.
2-for-1.
Yeah, 2-for-1.
Go for Johnny's,
man.
Yeah. There's a place for Johnny's Superstore, man, for everything you'll never need.
Yeah.
Do you know?
I think when things like that happen to a city, it gives it the character of... It, actually, you know, it's that definition of, like, I'll treat a man... with about what the content of character is, not the color of the skin or whatever.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's like,
it's got that vibe.
It's a mixed up place. Like, we all live in this small little area, you know, around Bristol, you know, St. Paul's being the center of it, in the center of town, you know, which is where the Jamaican, you know, community lived and set up shop, you know, many years ago, you know. And you know, I was lucky enough to kind of grow up, you know, spend some time coming up in my early 20s, living in that area, integrating with the scene, do you know what I mean? Picking up bits of the culture, you know, which really influenced the way I make music, and you know, just everything, you know, knowing how to cook ackee salt fish.
I see you do your fish and stuff, your cooking stuff,
you know,
as well.
But everything from, you know, from knowing how to season your food to knowing how to season your bass lines, you know, it's like we've come up in Bristol and like had a massive, you know, influence from all these different cultures, you know, and the Indians that moved here.
Yeah.
It's mad. I was out the other night in Bristol on a late night thing, and went to this place called Tasties. Some people might know that.
Yeah.
It's one of the last places open to get a little bit of late night yard food and a little, you know, rum or whatever. But I bumped into these two guys in there, a guy called Ajax, who runs this place called, you know, for years, Bristol's longest blues club. It's called Ajax Blues.
Yeah.
It's also a kind of community centre. And this guy called Johnny, who's an Indian brother, who bought a shop right next door to it. Now, Ajax has been running this place. It's more a community centre. He's recently been shut down in recent years for, like, Asbode and stuff like that. The police have basically just looked for an excuse to shut him down. Here comes my cat.
Yeah, your cat just came
Newman.
Over the wall, man.
Just taking, like, yo, what's going on? Yo, we're doing a podcast, Newman.
Find a Filipino kids for me, cat.
He's like, yo, where's the whiskers, man? Where's the food at?
What up?
But yeah, this guy Ajax, you know, he's been here. He moved here when he was 16 years old. He's 68 now, I think, or something. And was like, this is like 10, 15 years before the two-tone thing hit.
Yeah.
So imagine moving here at that age. And he's like, I just see him and I was like, yo, I know you guys. They know me from the area. I just want to chill with them and have a drink and just get some knowledge, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to better listen hard to understand the patwa, because it's deep.
Yeah.
You know, even the Indian brother, Johnny, his patwa is deep, man.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Like, you know, so I just hanging out with him and just getting a few stories. And Ajax was just telling me about, you know, when he first moved here, the battles he had to fight, you know, he had to fight just to kind of, you know, stand up for himself.
Those battles that got fought, right, and there was a clear winner. It was the culture, the society was the winner of those fights, man.
For true.
And, you know, I that's why I just don't want to have that, they have to fight him again, you know what I'm saying? That's why I think it's kind of, it's poignant for a city that's so irreverent to all that silly bigotry shit.
Yeah, man.
That these roads are called that, because it'll offend people that probably should be offended by it, rather than people who really, you know, are like, whatever, man.
Who really know, it's just, you know, we got to get down together.
So when you were growing up, because it's important to know, like, I mean, you know, I do like an intro to these things. I'll probably soup you up on that, you know, because it's kind of, not that I'm embarrassed, because I always thought that you were like a dude that always had, like, a head about the music that was always on what's not next thing, what's 5 years from now, because you would you know what I mean.
I've had my label Gut Funk now, you know, you support it on the radio,
man, great
always
stuff,
much love, thanks for that every time, you know, you always support our beats.
It's good music, dude, even if it wasn't you. You know,
and that's all we ever wanted, you know. Was, you know, just off the merit of the music alone. But I kind of, like, the other day I thought back, we're kind of like the bastard sons of the Wild Bunch. You know, like,
well, for people who don't know who the Wild Bunch is, let's rewind on that.
Okay, Wild Bunch, the DJ crew, the first DJ crew to do it big, to take it, you know, kind of take it worldwide. They went to Tokyo, whatever. They end up becoming Massive Attack, you know, who most people know of, and Tricky comes out of there as well.
And Nelly Hooper too,
Nelly,
right?
Nelly Hooper, Soul to Soul. You know, produced for Madonna.
Yeah,
you
know,
so
guy.
Yeah, he actually grew up down the road in Barton Hill over there.
I met him back in the day too. He was nuts back then, man.
Yeah, really?
Well, I think
I've never met Nelly.
Oh, dude. Nelly had me scared one time. Like, I was like, what? And he was like, this is some rock star shit. And I was like, I'm not going to go further in it. But I was like, all right, you know what? You're right.
Were you telling me?
He had to tell me. It was one of those moments where he had to tell me what was going on. I was like, well, thank you, Nelly.
Yeah, thank you for that.
I don't do this a lot, Nelly, but thank you. Now I know what it is. Wild dude, man.
Yeah, so that
was, I should say, I haven't seen him in 10 years.
Yeah, well, I saw him at Goldie's birthday party a couple of years back. But yeah, like, so yeah, these guys come out of there, you know, Milo being the first DJ who was like the most respected DJ in town, Nelly Hooper, they were the DJs of the crew.
And this is dudes with records. Remind everybody that people had to go out and buy records in Bristol from America, very hard
they
to do.
They were searching, man. They were going digging to London, America, you know, Japan, all over and stuff. Then you got Daddy G as well, one of the selectors of the crew as well. Then you had 3D on the mic, a guy called Willy Wee, later on a guy called Tricky, and then you had DJ Mushroom as well. So this was the Wild Bunch. They were the coolest ass motherfuckers in town.
Yeah.
They still are.
Yeah, but I mean,
like it or not, and they probably don't like us, but we are the illegitimate children of the Wild Bunch. So,
I think they'd probably be happy.
Yeah. Well, it's too late, man. You know, we're out.
I got a great Grant story, man. So G's in New York, right? I'm DJing at Bungalow 8. Remember that spot?
No.
I was talking to Uncle Mike the other day.
Yeah.
Uncle Mike. Anyway, so we're talking about how, when I was down there, right? And it was me, Becky, and G, right? And we're sitting upstairs, and I'm DJing at the club. It's like 10 o'clock. He just gets there with Becky, right? So,
yeah.
And it's you know, no one's there, right? But I'm playing like something on Serato, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, this is when I smoke. I was like, I'm going outside to smoke. I don't like the smoking ban thing. But it was after that, right? Yeah, so I pop outside, and one of the security dudes, this dude comes up to me. Disco comes out. His name is Disco. He's like, yo, man, there's a black pirate trying to climb over into the DJ booth. What should I do?
Yeah.
And I was like, no, that's cool. It's my friend from England.
Right,
he's
right.
I said, you heard of Massive Attack? He's like, oh, hell yeah, man. I was like, that's the dude from Massive Attack. He goes, he talks like a fucking pirate.
I'm sure G would love that.
No,
man,
I told Grant when I came back up. I go, these brothers think you were like a fucking pirate, man.
But that was dope. The Disco, the security guard, that heard of, you know, Massive Attack.
Well, that was the thing.
They went worldwide.
Well, that's how I got kind of turned on, especially with Massive Attack. When I was in the service, there was some Massive Attack stuff going on, and I remember like, wow,
what year were you?
Well, when did they put their first music out? Because it went from Wild Bunch,
it was like 1988, I think. 88, what we're talking about, 98. 1998.
No, dude, you're tripping. No,
was
it's before the Criminals, man, definitely.
Okay, so okay, no, well, maybe it's 96 then.
Well, we have to be early before 96. Well, anyway.
I know that the first album
I'm
going to
take my phone out because people are going to start tripping. Yeah, right now, they're listening going, dude, it was... All right, so...
Yeah, it was crazy. The other day, I was having a conversation and we didn't have no internet connection and we started to like try to draw facts and not going to check them, and then suddenly we were lost.
Well, so, man, welcome to the United States with that shit.
Yeah. I mean, if you can't Google stuff now to check your facts, it's like, yeah, we're stuck, you know? We're kind of like, rely on these things too much.
Well, I was saying, you're not as smart as your phone is, man.
Well, that's, ain't that the truth?
That's the, people think they're as smart as their phone. Like, I don't need to retain that information. No, you do, man. You need to keep that shit. 1991, that's what I thought, man.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Well, I'm
I was knee deep in 91, boy.
91?
So, yeah, 91, that's what I thought.
So I was nearer with 89 than...
You were close with 89. That's why I was like, because 89 is more,
Well, it's been a bit of a blur.
But that was like my first turn on to that. And what I always appreciated about that, and I think it comes with just, you know, I guess what we're talking about, like people having a lot of diversity in the culture, hearing a lot of different music, especially in our generation. Well, I'm a little bit older than you, but in our generation, there was like cassettes and shit, and everybody had cassettes. I guess they're doing that again now with like everybody sending files back and forth. We'd be sending you transfers and all this kind of shit back and forth. And I think that's a great way to get music around.
Yeah, I mean, diversity back in those days was definitely here, from the reggae to the punk, big punk scene. I mean, that's what Bristol is. It is a melting pot of people and cultures. And you've got, like, you know, Milo, who I mentioned earlier, DJ from the Wild Bunch, was a punk rocker before that, as was Delge. You know, Grant was into reggae. But, you know, we all met in these sort of, you know, this kind of, this neutral ground, you know, different clubs, underground parties, you know, a place called the Dugout, a place called the Moon Club,
do you think
place called the Tropics, you know, these kind of little bars in the inner city areas, and then the kind of, you know, the blues clubs, and, you know, people exchange ideas.
Yeah.
And that's really what, you know, came out in that early, you know, early Massive Attack album. And you can hear it in there, you know.
It's like a war of the worlds, you know what I mean? It's like society in flux. That's what's all the beautiful shit about it.
Yeah.
Do you think that's because people don't really hang around with people who don't agree with them now.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like different music kind of people, they all hang out. Like I'm a metal dude, I hang out with a metal crew. You know, but I remember back in New York, it was the same thing. It's like some people you liked, it didn't really depend on what their squad was, but even the social status and shit like that.
Well, you had Fat Five Freddy going to CBGB's, right? Yeah, you know, same thing. You had Blondie going down to, you know, as folklore tells it, down to the Bronx, you know, and, you know, as they reenacted in the Wild Star film. But yeah, you know, Bristol has always had that, and that's definitely influenced, you know,
when you
the way I approach music now.
Yeah, when you came up, what was like the first thing that, because everybody's like, most people I talked about are musicians, right?
Yeah, yeah.
If they were brought up religious, right, in any way, shape, or form, they go, when music became my religion,
which is
like a way to kind of say when I first started making music my life, and I remember when I did that and shit.
Right.
And, you know, it pissed my mom off, though. Yeah.
Right. She realized maybe religion wasn't your first thing.
No, but you know what? I'm still as spiritual as I was when I was little. It's just in a more refined kind of way.
Yeah,
I don't think I'm against anything.
No, definitely. There's lessons to be learned
from all
angles and all corners.
Yeah, you've got to be discerning.
Yeah.
But when that moment came for you, what was like the first type of music you were like, yo?
So what, we're going way back? Are we going all the way back, like maybe
9, 10 years old?
Okay.
I'll tell you, man, mine was like some Donna Summer shit.
Oh, really?
That tweaked me for some reason. Donna Summer shit, yeah.
What, I Feel Love? Or
all around that. Because I start hearing her on the radio. She was a big deal, right? Yeah,
she was a big breakthrough act.
Yeah.
I remember watching that, The Get Down.
Yeah.
And there's a kind of like, you know, Donna Summer character there.
Yeah,
she was like, Donna Summer's huge.
It was huge back then. Yeah, but it was nothing like The Get Down.
Right.
The Get Down's crazy.
Okay.
Becky was watching like, wow, it looked so cool back then. I go, Jaden Smith wasn't around and it was not like that.
It was a bit rougher.
Yeah, it was like Technicolor filtered shit.
Yeah. So, my first memory of sort of having a record was this record called Old Superman, and it had like a vocoder in it. I don't remember who it's by. So it was
Spit the Google
Old
out, man.
Superman, and it's just kind of like, yeah, I think that was the first
Superman. It was called
Old Superman.
Oh, Superman. Oh, like Old Calcutta, right?
Yeah. OH Superman. I'm pretty sure that's what it is. Better come up.
Whoa, it just came up right off the top.
Okay,
G.
There you go.
Oh, wait, here we go.
Memory's still intact.
It's back. We're on the Google, man. We on Laurie Anderson.
This is it.
Really? Wow, that's fucking cool, man.
Yeah,
that's still fucking cool.
Yeah,
man.
I haven't actually heard this. Yeah.
I don't know if we can play it because it's a podcast.
Oh, dear, yeah, okay. Shit. You got to have to Google this one yourself.
Yeah, man. I have to be hitting.
So that was one. And then there was things like Thomas Dolby.
Yeah, I liked him too, man.
Thomas Dolby.
It was like complicated, but yet simple at the same time.
Yeah, early kind of computer fun.
It was and adept.
Then I saw Tony Basil, right? And at that age, I was just like, yo, this chick's kind of hot.
Who's Tony Basil? Oh, Ricky. Yo, you hear the Spanish version?
No.
You'll be playing in the club tomorrow. Yo, this is the best
shit. Oh, Ricky, you're so fine.
It's in Spanish. Yo, Mateo.
Yes.
Mateo.
He tells that,
oh, my God. But you'll be like,
Ricky, you're so fine.
Oh, my God. You'll trip when you hear this
but
shit.
But the video was cool for all that, you know? She had a dope video. She had the tune. And the tune was kind of upbeat as well.
It's called Hey Ricky, right? Hey Ricky?
No, the original was called hang on a sec. Hey, we're Ricky, going crazed out now. It's Hey Mickey, you're so fine.
Hey
you're
Mickey, so fine. Said, hey Mickey.
Tony Basil.
T-O-N-I.
I'm gonna have to get
a trip, dude. I'm gonna pause this, I'll play this for you. Oh yeah, Mickey, you're so fine. You gotta check out the Spanish line, baby. So yeah, we had to take an intermission so I could play in the Spanish version of Hey Mickey. So now that you got that song in your head, kick back, give us a minute or two and finish up. We'll be back.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
All right, well, I'm back with D. Yeah, I had to play you that, man.
You know
what people were telling me, like, oh, you should play music on a podcast. I was told that you just not do it because it's so hard to not, like, clear it.
Right.
But, like, you can't clear it. It's something like that because the way podcasts go out, apparently.
Right.
Because anybody can get them. It's like they can't monetize it.
You just don't do it.
Podcast
is like, you know, everyone's doing podcasts. Even Noriega's got his own podcast.
No, Noriega just died, man.
Nori.
I thought you meant Manuel Noriega.
No, I meant Capone and Noriega.
He's still fine, man.
What?
I saw him recently, man.
We have to sing songs on there.
He's fine, dude. Yeah.
You can't play him. Cool. Not going to get nothing. But yeah, man, now podcast is the call of the day.
For me, it's cool because I get to spend time with people that I want to get information from and have conversations with and shit and just chill, because when you're like a dad and stuff, your time is your own to a certain extent, right. So I was like, the time that I have, I want to use wisely. You know, I'm not saying I'm too busy to do shit. I love doing everything I do,
definitely,
but this podcast thing helps me. Yes. Just like, you know, I haven't seen you in a minute either, so it's good for me to come by and show you the backyard.
I gotta hear that track. Which one?
We messed with last time.
Oh yeah, that sounded dope.
Yeah,
man.
Cool.
I love dope.
But that's the thing. I mean, you and me, I guess we've known each other since Bex, right? So that's like 12.
Yeah, well,
12
and
years
a bit before that. But
yeah,
we,
no,
we
but
got
like
to,
since
no,
we
I've got
started
to know
hanging,
you personally since you married Becky. So yeah. And it's been nice to know you guys living down the road.
Yeah,
and
no, it's
coming
it's
up
an awesome
here
thing.
To, you know, just pass through. And
yo, I love coming to the city, chilling, seeing some brick. You know what I'm saying?
Some real brick, some real red brick here.
Yeah, red brick, man. I'm all with that bath stone style.
I'm on that brick house.
my house, when it gets really hot, is awesome because it's cold on the inside. It's just like that stone.
Oh, that's that nice thing about them thick walls, man.
It never gets hot in that house. That's great, man. But anyway, stop from up joint.
Yeah. We deviate.
No, but we were kind of at like the music that you were getting into that got you into going, wow, music is the thing I think I'm going to do.
So then it kind of, I think I have a little Elvis period. A little slick my hair back Elvis period. Because I've always just been into the kind of like,
this when you're like a young teenager or something?
Nah, this is younger than that. This is like, you know.
Oh, really?
This is like.
You're like a little Mac. Walking around like Elvis.
I went for the phases, man. Do you know what I mean? I've always been trying to like, you know, pose it out a bit. Slick my hair back if I could. So I got into Elvis for a little bit. Then I got into, I got into Blondie for a bit.
Blondie were great. They still are. Man, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, I still rock a Blondie joint whenever I get the chance. Yeah. But yeah, and I thought she was dead hot as well, which she is. Do you know?
Oh, man,
she was
I met her one time, dude. I met her at the...
I met her at an awards thing once.
Yeah, I met her at an awards thing. It was the British Comedy Awards or something, right?
Really?
And it was back in the day, too. Yeah, it was probably doing a bit of that
stuff. She had this dress on, man. And so I wanted to say that she had the dress on, but it had loads of razor blades over it.
Really?
And I was just like, that's what Blondie needs to be wearing.
Yeah, well, that's what she definitely needs to be. Don't touch her.
She'll cut your heart, boy.
Yeah, she'll cut anything. But I met her at British Comedy Awards. I was doing something with Jonathan Ross, like presenting an award, and they were like, oh, you could doing that with... Debbie Harry.
Yeah.
I was like,
oh, you presented the award with her?
Yeah, it was like me and her and John.
Jonathan Ross.
On stage, right? So, but I went up to her before. We were backstage in the green room having beers or whatever. I went up, hey, Debbie, just want to say what's up. I'm Huey. I'm doing this thing with you later. And I had a thing for you since I could have a thing.
Jeez.
Right? And she was like,
first time she said that.
No, I swear to God. I'd never been that forward with a woman, but I figured, like, yo, that's Debbie Harry, man. She and I've shared some moments that she doesn't know about, so I told her.
She's up there. She's one of the dope, you know, chicks of that thing as well. I've got to tell my Joe Strummer story, man. While we're here telling stories about people we idolise, so, you know, Joe Strummer is the man.
One of the other things we have in common. We love our Clash, bro. We love our Joe Strummer, man.
Cheers me on that to Joe, man.
Joe Senior, bro.
To Joe, man. So I met him in a lift in Mount Fuji Rock Festival.
Yeah, I was out there with him.
You were there?
Criminals were there.
Hang on a sec. We shared a lot of the same...
the same moments,
dressing rooms.
Yeah, we'd literally met. He was probably on his way from or to the restaurant.
Maybe. He was going to the gig, basically. I got on the lift and I looked over and I've, like, listened to The Clash, because The Clash came after Debbie Harry, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, they did, right? Yeah.
In between the specials and all that as well. But I was like, yo, it's Joe Strummer in the lift. And I said, what the fuck am I going to say? Like, it's Joe. So I was like, quickly, and I was just, the only thing I could think of was, like, I had a bit of, like, I've been given a bit of hash in my pocket. So I'm like, Joe, do you want a spliff? And he looked at me and just gave me this kind of little smile of knowledge, like, nah, I don't smoke till after the gig. And I was just like, cool, that's it, that's good enough for me.
Joe was like, he was the closest thing, well, he was my biggest rock star of my whole life, man. I tell this story, because Uncle Mike was the guy who, he brought him into the dressing room, we met him.
Okay.
But dude, he was just completely awesome like that.
Dude.
Oh man, yeah. Joe,
I wish I could have met more, but it's just the one time. You got to hang out with him and stuff, didn't you?
He had my number, man. Mornings. He used it. I love that dude, man. Yeah, he was completely amazing. Man. Yeah, man. God bless him, man. So with that kind of I think you were really young if you were getting into the Clash.
Yeah,
right?
I was into the Clash. Like, you know, it was 12. Just before I moved to Bristol, I was got into a punk thing. I went through from Elvis phase to a ska phase, you know, Specials, Selector, Madness, Bad Manners.
Yeah.
And then I got into a punk phase, do you know what I mean? Which was Pistols, and this must have been, you know, Pistols, Clash, Dead Kennedys. Crass.
I love Crass. Yeah, wow, Crass, you were down with Crass, man. All right, dude.
Crass.
You were like the cool young kid then, man. You're like, did you have older brother or sister or something? I know.
Yeah, I'm an only child.
Really? Okay, I'm an only child too. Because anything I came to, I think it might be the same thing with you, man. That's why we gravitate towards one another.
Maybe, man. Yeah.
It's like you had to find something that was your own, right?
Yes.
And and that's why I always went out off the beaten path when it came to music as well.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And that kind of, I guess that enriches your. I guess maybe it plants a good garden that can grow stuff for later. You know, it puts the no borders on the garden, makes a big garden.
Yeah, definitely. And Crass. And a bit of Exploited as well, which were a UK thing, you know. But they would do that. I remember seeing them on Top of the Pops one time.
Anti-Nowhere League?
I remember the Anti-Nowhere League. Yeah, all these bands were coming through that
time. Were you into like New York stuff, like Bad Brains? Bad Brains are DC, but Cro-Mags New York stuff?
Do you know what? Nah, you need to pick him up to speed.
Mackie was in the Cro-Mags.
Really?
Yeah, man. It's weird.
There's so much New York punk side of it. You know? I mean, I was more clued up on the English side of it. You know?
Mackie and I literally hung out at the same spots, but never met each other. Well, maybe a little bit, because I knew him when I met him at the studio.
Right.
It's a weird story.
Well, it sounds like we got a similar path, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, so I went from that, and then I moved to Bristol, aged 12 years old, and got into hip-hop.
Boom.
Saw Beat Street. Saw Wild Style.
Yeah.
I remember going to the cinema.
Do you have a Wild Style album, by the way?
Which one? The Breakbeat album? The actual live
soundtrack?
Things? Nah. Crossed.
All right, because on the cover, that's this dude, Dr. Revolt, Dr. Revolt's like one of the most famous dudes. And we hung with him and this guy Gerb, who was Gerb Futura and Stash, the dudes that did the Philly Blunt shit.
Yeah, wow.
And they were like the crew that hung out with Joe when he first came to New York.
Yeah, it was Futura 2000.
Yeah.
Man, it's the same similar story. Like, you know, that I idolize that shit.
Those are my G's.
I look at them photos from that era and when they did that thing in Times Square and they sold out like 11 nights in a row.
I was like maybe 11 or 12 with a friend of mine trying to get in.
Can you get in?
We were just like, the Clash are the shit.
Yeah, man. Americans really got into the Clash. And they brought out the song, you know, I'm so bored with the USA.
But they were right. Everybody in the USA was bored.
They got it. Everyone was thank God someone said it.
Yeah. We're not as thin-skinned as everybody thinks we are, man. It's interesting because, especially just off the topic, just being an American guy when I'm in the UK, people are always like, yo, Huey, can you tell us what the fuck is going on over there? You know, like conspiratorially, we love you, man. What the fuck's going on?
Can you explain what your people are up to?
Can you just bottle and put that shit in a really small bite? I can understand what the fuck's going on and I can go about my life. Because they don't want to hear me go, well, in 1948, And you know what? I can't, man. Just like, you know, I mean, we've always been the guy who played his music too loud in the neighborhood. And that's, probably a really glossed over way to put it, but it's hard for me to explain it.
You're looking for the wrong guy for the quick explanation.
But politics is what I was trying to get to.
Okay.
In the UK, when you were young, that was that was the Thatcher era.
Yeah, man. So, the Thatcher era was coming up. You know, and I've always come from a sort of left field family. I mean, my mum brought me up, you know, single-handedly on her own, and you know, we travelled around a lot of festivals. You know, she kind of, you know, survived hand to mouth style. You know, ended up, you know, we didn't really have nowhere to live. We moved into this place called Hateford Farm, which is kind of like a community area. I wouldn't say hippie, but it definitely was, you know, we'd grow our own vegetables, the chickens running around. But they're, you know, the main family.
What were the people wearing? That's, you know, if the hippies.
Well, you know, my mum was more hippie, but one of them, the main house was a doctor, you know. But they met in Saudi Arabia or somewhere on some refugee mission. Wow. You know, a group of people they met and they decided they would come back to England and buy this farm. You know, and they, you know, to this day, they still have refugees come and stay there. You know, so I come from a pretty right on kind of, you know, environment.
Yeah.
Yo, can you hear that? That's my washing machine beeping.
A lot of shit happens during my podcast.
Yeah.
It's not that crazy.
The cat's coming in. Yeah. So we just we travelled around. You know, my mum decided she was going to sell the donuts. So she
really?
Yeah. She's got this thing. She was called Wonder Donuts.
So your mom's a bit of an entrepreneur, like
got some hustle in her. 100%.
I met her. She's cool.
Yeah. Before that, she had a health food shop in North Devon called Sun Foods. So it was like pioneering the health food era. This is like back in 1974. Do you know? So like, come through this. You know, she built this caravan and started deciding to go around festivals selling donuts. So, you know, here I was on my summer holidays and just got dragged, you know, off. Well, I wouldn't say dragged, I was in it. I was like, let's go.
Yeah, word.
But we travelled around Glastonbury. I've been going to Glastonbury since I was 2 years old. Just going around all these different festivals in
the
Southwest.
Year?
Yeah, I am actually.
I'm there one.
What day are you there?
I fucking forgot, that'd man. I think it's a night. Sunday.
That's the night we're playing our thing.
It's Mr. Jam or Groove Ride or something.
No, you're playing Arcadia.
Yeah.
Yo, touch, man.
Is that good?
Whoa, it's crazy. You're going to be playing on this kind of like...
I'm playing
like spider.
7 o'clock at night, though.
Yeah, that's cool. Listen, this thing is crazy. It's like the rave dome. It's like out of Mad Max.
Really?
It's a spider. They have like fire flames shooting out of it. You know, they have this kind of, you know, theatrical show.
Seen like this guy like this shit to shoot out.
Yeah.
But at 7 o'clock in the afternoon ain't that shit happening.
Yeah, but you know,
people
what
be like, yo, let's cut that shit out.
Cool,
we got on
you
there.
Just listen, just, you know, give them the look, man. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, just give it to you. Give me some pyro. This is Stevie Wonder, Sir Duke. Give me some pyro.
I need flames
bam,
now.
Bam, 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 boom.
Draw for Biggie in there.
Yeah. I always
sick of the average.
Like, I know we've DJed together, and it's amazing because you're an amazing DJ. I don't have to get into that, but it's like, last time I DJed, you came running up and rewound the turntable on me. And I was like, wow.
What were you playing, man? Yeah, some Evelyn Champagne King or something?
There was a lot of that going on, man.
I love that
old classic shit, man. And that's another thing, man. Like, when we started, I guess when we first met, there was a CD you gave me, and I put it on the band's tour bus. And we rolled across Europe and America and Asia, and no one noticed that it was a CD, because it would go on and people thought it was a radio station. And they, even though you hear the song like 30, 40 times, you just assume it's a cool fucking radio station.
Right.
Now, that was, what was that CD called?
It was called Laminate Radio.
Boom.
And Laminate Radio was me and my brother Gus Pirelli.
Yeah, man.
We decided, it was actually in someone else's birthday, Glastonbury, because we used to go there, like I said, year for year. We'd always hang out at the backstage dance area. But, you know, we come through the era. There used to be a lot of, like, James Brown style, you know. They used to play I Believe in Miracles, yeah, Rare Groove, you know. But I sort of bumped into him one time. You know, coming from Bristol, we came up on this music. It's another part, you know, of the history that goes back to the Wild Bunch. Is that boogie has always been in Bristol. It's always been a boogie
word
right
up,
here.
Man. That's why, know? I'm so happy.
And the kind of like that certain era of the 80s that I think was a real golden pocket. You know, even maybe late 1979, but between 1979 and 1983.
Yeah, that's
it. It's golden pocket, and it was when things were kind of changing over from it being, you know, disco and funk and analog, mm-hmm. and things started, you know, the drum machine started to be included, yeah. you know, and synthesizers started to come in, but it was still great soul songwriting, great soul funk musicians, great singers, you know, the cream of the crop.
Yeah.
But there's a new sound in town, you know, and the boogie hit. So it was just like, you know, after 1983, the technology changed, the drum sound changed, you know, it became
what was
more,
it, the TR-707 or something like that?
It was the Lindrum.
Yeah, okay.
It was the Lindrum, it was the Prophet 5, you know, the Oberheim.
Oh, DX7.
Yeah,
I know about that.
Yeah, yeah. And like, just, you know, certain equipment that was just in all studios at that time, you know, plus like, you know, great musicians that could really rock a groove, man. Yeah. You know, there was no Pro Tools back then.
That was my school. I was inadvertently in the middle of that when that was happening. When I was in 81, I was in that first band of mine, right? So we used to rent a rehearsal space down on like 2nd Avenue and 4th Street, and the dude who ran the studio was like a bass player and did sessions, and he had another studio where he did like big sessions and shit. And like, we couldn't do the one rehearsal room, he'd just use the main room there, whatever, because we were just kids banging around playing rock music,
right? But that was where it was all going on. That was when the sound was being birthed, you know. And all over America it was happening, whether it was LA, you know, Cincinnati, you know, wherever, the boogie was, you know, spreading like wildfire, right?
He was,
you know,
the dude that was like, yo, this guy's called Nile Rodgers, he's playing guitar, listen to this.
Yeah.
I was like, huh? Right. I've met Nile, and it's like, Nile, it's all been about you, Nile. Yeah, hopefully I'll get him on the podcast.
Jeez,
he's very busy, though.
Yeah, true.
To get, like, he'll definitely hang for like 20 minutes or something.
You know, Chic have just had a massive rebirth resurgence, and it's like their music is just so good, so classic, like all age groups, any situation. You know, I cannot
funerals,
get a set without Jordan.
Funerals, you can play Chic.
Yeah, exactly, you know.
Weddings, bar mitzvahs,
the whole
parties, like straight up, if you play like Thinking of You or something like that, which is Chic, pretty much, but it's just, you know, point is,
100%.
You listen, just like, you know, Nile is just, like he says, it's like, I'm not doing anything hard, I'm just doing something that needs to be done. And him and Bernard Edwards, my God.
But I guess that's what it was back then, you know, like I said, the musicians were so good.
Oh, yeah.
But they realised, you know, they had to condense it down to something that just needed to be done. It was not over the top, it stuck to the groove.
Yeah, that's like,
you know what I mean? And it rocked what needed to be rocked. It made you want to dance, it made you feel good, man.
Here we are,
like
40 years later, like, oh, that was the shit.
So anyway,
those years.
Back to Laminate Radio, you know what I mean? And that whole influence of coming, you know, through Bristol growing up and listening to these DJs going to house parties, you know, and then being at Glastonbury and there just being too much James Brown. Not that there ever is too much James Brown, but at
but
this
there
point
could
there
be.
Was.
There could possibly
was.
Be.
Yeah, it was too much. You're like, I believe in miracles. It's like, yo, where's that hard groove, man? Yeah. Where's that hard funk, you know, head down, you know, still
the ugly
feel
face,
good.
Like the some smell face.
Yes, right, man. I need my funk face for this business. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we decided, and this was after, you know, me doing loads of drum and bass, jungle for many, many years. I just needed the change, man. I needed, I needed some, you know, a juxtaposition, something that I could
That gives you perspective when you're a musician. It's like, stop playing what you're playing all the time, play something completely different. Like, I picked up pedal steel and started playing country western.
Yeah, you have to, man. You have to get some new ingredients into the pot to really,
People thought I was crazy, man. They thought I was crazy.
Yeah, really?
I was like, look, man. I was like, yo, this is like, as simple as like the blues is, yeah. but so much more interpretive than, right. than a lot of the pop music I was
they
playing.
They tried to say Ray was crazy when he started playing uh-huh. country westerns yeah. too. You know, it's like, nah, this is, you know, it's music. Music's music at the yeah. end of the day, and you have to go to other places in order to learn something new.
You've turned me on to a lot of boogie, though, man. I mean, you've yeah, actually put, yeah, in a lot of ways, man, you gave me that one file. Remember that, yeah, man, yeah, when I got, yeah, you were over at my house yeah. for Becky's birthday, right?
That's right.
And it was like the next morning, and I'd just gotten that new computer. I was like, yo, I got this
new computer.
And you were like, yo, and you pulled out a memory stick. You're like, put that in, brother. Yeah. And
it's been serving you well for a minute. That's
awesome, man. But you got it from somebody else. I got it from this guy.
Yes, yeah. This guy DJ Andy from Brazil.
Is this just DJ Andy?
Yeah, he's like, you know, there's two DJs in Brazil, four drum and bass. It was like DJ Marky and DJ Andy, and Andy Cal handed it to me.
Oh, really?
So yeah, that was, you know, it just had everything on there, and you're right, I had all the artwork on there too.
Yeah, the artwork's amazing because yeah. that's just an extra little touch of class. Would you? Because you can give anybody fucking files nowadays. Right. You want to send you the file? On, yeah, you send
yeah,
it.
Yeah. And that was the thing about Laminate Radio, was like, you know, we wanted to wear suits and shades, man, and drink champagne, you know. We actually had visions of being flown in by helicopter, you know. But, you know, that was something that inspired the mix, you know, which was basically based on a radio show. So we spent ages making our own jingles.
Yeah,
you know,
it was amazing.
We did our own sting, layered up 30 vocals, you know, to create this Laminate Radio.
Oh, yeah, it was tremendous.
And it was just a party, you know, and it was basically music.
Can people get that? Because they need that.
People got it, man. You know, yeah, it got really, you know, a lot of love, man, and still does to this day. Yeah. A couple of times every year, I get a tweet from, you know, someone like, you know, maybe Mr. Jam or Eats Everything, you know, big DJs in their game. You know, Laminate Radio is still my favorite thing, and yeah, I'm just like, yes, thank you.
It was one of those things where, like, I brought it to America, and I was at a party, and some shit happened, and the music kind of stopped, right? And I had a backpack with me, not like I walked around with a backpack all the time, but I think I might have been. I think, you know, I was at the studio,
ain't no
so I had
rapper.
No, I wasn't that dude, but I was that dude that had like a Yankee hat on and a backpack.
Yeah. Just so happens you had the Laminate Radio.
I had the Laminate shit in there. I popped it on,
yeah,
and the place just like, it was like,
wicked.
And then it was like, just looked around, and everybody started dancing, like nothing happened. I was like, oh,
instant party started. You know,
that's unbelievable, bro.
Yeah, man, I'm happy that it's we couldn't actually do a second one. Because we just didn't want to kind of, you know, lackluster it and, you know, do something that wasn't as good. Everyone's like, when's the next one coming? It's like, yo, that was our history. That was literally every tune from our upbringing that we came up with, you know, a dear to our heart.
And you said there's only a limited period of time that this music was created, authentically,
man,
anyway.
Yeah. And we just couldn't actually find the right combination of tracks to give that feeling, you know. Every track on there meant something to us. Mm-hmm. So that's like a little phase, you know. We kind of, you know, we don't do the Laminate thing so much no more. Mm. But it was a massive learning curve, you know. Yeah. I actually started to produce a couple of tunes. I still am.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, you've always been an amazing producer. So the stuff that you're recording now, tell me the different projects.
I mean, there's so many different layers right now to my production thing, you know, and I've been through, you know, ups and downs with it, you know, emotional roller coasters through trying to, you know, for me, it always seems to come back to music and me trying to get out what I want to express, you know, and in the studio, you know, with the sound, you know, the production skills, the technique, the musicianship, working with the right people, you know, and just making myself happy, not getting bored, not getting complacent, not just becoming a robot, you know, that just basically, you know, feeds a scene and keeps doing something because it's easy. Because I don't believe that things should be easy, you know. I believe that you should really have to work and bleed for your art, man, you know.
No,
and if you ain't bleeding, you ain't doing it right.
Well, it seems like anybody who ever inspired you did.
Yeah.
So it kind of instilled that in you. Yeah. So I'm the same way with stuff, man. I mean, I know, granted, the Criminals aren't really, like, chart band anymore.
No, but you still got massive following there.
You know, people like hearing our music, and that's the thing. It's kind of like, I get you.
Because it's got a shit out live show, man.
Well, aside from that, it's like, it's not like they can listen to another band that sounds like us.
True.
So I feel, you know, that if people want to hear us, I play for a lot of people, and I love doing that. But it seems like at some points, right, do you feel, especially with, you know, different parts of you. Like, I did a solo record, and it was pretty much all the country western shit.
Yeah,
I was
doing
that fast. I was like, nah, dude. And it was that's cool. Dude's got to do what a dude's got to do. But did it always come back to you doing, like, when I say dance music, I don't mean drum bass. When I say dance music, I don't mean the boogie, but, like, because I know this thing just came out with is amazing.
There's a lot of different stuff that I'm producing right now with different people. I mean, we're working predominantly with a guy called Dismantle.
Yeah.
We got a crew called Dimantle, you know? Dismantle, Dimantle. Did you join?
No, I got it, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're the Brangelina of dance music.
That's funny.
That's what Annie Mack called us. Anyway.
Really?
Yeah.
She's back on the radio now.
She's back on the radio.
Yeah,
I work with Addison Groove as well. You know, the boogie project I'm working on is called Sure Thing, and that's kind of a loose collective of Bristol boogie heads, musicians, singers, songwriters, you know. And, you know, I kind of flip between stuff. I'm still just trying to just finish something that's good, that's got that feeling to it, that's got, you know, that's got the right funk in, you know, in the way it sounds, in the way it feels, you know. And I'm still not there yet, but that keeps me getting up in the morning, getting in the studio and hitting buttons, man.
You know, like, when a lot of people do this, they do this comparison thing, like, out of all my friends, who's the David Bowie of all my friends? You'd be the David Bowie of all my friends. Yo, because, not because you got blonde hair now.
Yo, man, I might have to
But in the best possible sense of being a musician, that, like, I was listening to, what was that, Modern Love by David Bowie, The Dentist, today, right? I'm like,
right.
You know, that's a fucking great song. It's him doing Motown.
Right.
But you'd never think that's a Motown song.
You know, I've never really looked at it like, I'm not going to lie, right, David Bowie is someone who I've never followed like that.
But when I think about it,
he did, like, Let's Dance, which was a straight-up disco banger.
That was Nile Rodgers.
Production. Still kills his live shows with that. Yeah. But then he went from that, and, like, he just did, like, you said, Motown joint.
Yeah.
And then he did, you know, Golden Years. Golden Years.
But, back in the day, when I was a kid, I used to watch Soul Train all the time. That was the shit, Soul Train.
Really?
He was on Soul Train.
Yeah.
He was the first white guy that...
Doing Let's Dance?
No, not Let's Dance. Fame.
Oh, Fame.
Fame, dude, Fame. Because there was a James, you know, the James Brown song that's the same riff.
Oh, really? He took the vibe from that?
No, well, it was Carlos Alomar, the guitar player, dude, who played with Bowie and played with James Brown's band.
Word.
He had that riff, the Fame riff.
Really?
Yeah.
He took that from James to Bowie.
He gave it to both of them, and James. But, you know, because the thing is, you know, if you listen to that song, it's John Lennon singing Fame.
Yeah. So basically, he took, like, you know, he
went to the studio with both dudes. He double timed his song. So he went in with John Lennon and David Bowie at Electric Lady for a day, and they tracked that.
Wow.
And then he went and tracked something with James Brown. But James Brown was like, "Fuck them! I'll put mine out first." Put his shit out first. It was like,
he jumped the gun on
David. Like, yeah, but they were like, that's a great James Brown. And then David Bowie was like, I got a Beatle. Boom.
It's a great cosign, right?
Oh, yeah, man.
No, yeah. Man, I never knew that. It's a
but
great
what
story.
I meant by, it's a long way to say it, but what I'm saying is, like, I like the way, you know, you use inspiration, but you still remain who you are.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, even with, you know, like, we're talking about when you did stuff with Ronnie.
Yeah.
And then when you did stuff, I guess with Dismantle.
Yeah,
and then you're doing, like, some of the boogie stuff. And then,
stuff we work on
is very different as well.
Yeah, yeah,
and you're doing
exactly.
stuff with Crust now. Oh, sorry, I shouldn't have said that. Well, I might have just making shit up.
Nah, do you know what? You can say you've seen us, just not in the same room, together.
All right, I won't say
that. You've seen us separately, do you know what I mean? But you haven't seen us in the same room.
No. Like last time I was here, none of y'all were here.
No, you saw the underneath of my wallabies. Yeah, they were blue and cream.
Yeah. Those were nice though.
Yo, have you seen Ghostface's got some blue and cream fucking wally joints coming out?
Yeah.
Yo, I need those, bruv.
But I found a website that got all them.
What, the cross colours, yeah?
Yeah, like the old Clark original joints.
No, but the half, because, you know, in the classic Ghost tune, you know what I mean? Because Wu-Tang is another massive. But my favourite things ever are Wu-Tang, The Clash, The Specials, and skateboarding.
Yeah,
that's me in a nutshell. Yeah, you know, if I'm gonna off to space in a pod, you know,
I want these four things. I'm not leaving.
Desert island, and I want some Clark Wallabies. You know, half blue and half cream.
Oh yeah, man, we'll get you the ones you need too.
Yeah, but don't know, man. It's just all kind of come back around with my label Gutter Funk right now. You know, and the music I'm making now. You know, I'm finding peace at the moment with what we're doing. You know, with my various collaborators who I'm lucky enough to be around. You know, and just where I'm at with it all right now. You know, I managed to get my head out my ass, and the sun's out.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. I want to keep you all day. I got to go pick up my girlfriend.
Yeah, that's cool. How long have we been doing this?
Let me see here. Well, I think about. think we've done about an hour.
That's cool. That's cool.
Around about. But that's cool. Since you're local, dude, and I know that I'll be seeing you because I work in the studio with you quite often.
Yeah, we'll be seeing you soon.
We should do more of this. So I think we should take this to take it to another park. Yeah,
another
take it to another park across the street.
Yeah, right? Thanks, hey, it's been a pleasure, man.
My pleasure, man. Thanks. Cool. Oh yeah! How'd you like that? Now, D is a very cool dude, and it was a great hang with him. And it's good to get the inside scoop on the fabled Bristol music scene. I'll be talking with other cats, too, because he put me on to some other cool people that we might be getting on the pod. So, we got a hot pod actually coming up over the next couple of weeks. Stay tuned for all this good stuff coming your way. Then we got my G, Arthur Baker. He invented electro music. So we're talking about Afrika Bambaataa. He also worked with New Order, produced some records there. Miles Davis, Muddy Waters, great story there. You don't want to miss this. And every badass remix you ever heard. Yo, word, you don't want to miss that one. Then we got Mr. G himself, the one and only drum and bass maverick, my G, Goldie. We're recording a live podcast with a live audience in London. So stay tuned for all that coming up soon on Huey Off the Record. Now you know the drill, my friends. Please rate, review, and make it nice. Leave 5 stars and subscribe. Thank you very much. Stay classy.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.